Welcome to episode 5 of PCSD.
What's the word?
And we are talking how to protect yourself, your family, your car during this holiday season.
Very, very important topics. And a lot of people really wanting to take advantage of the community out there. So we want to get ahead of it, bring in the experts. We have arson and auto theft detective Christopher Joyce. He's going to talk about that side of things. And then a little bit later in the show, we're going to have financial crimes detective Michael Wilson. I'll try my hardest to not yell out Wilson when he comes on, but we'll talk to him in a little bit. So we'll talk with Detective Joyce first. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. First things first, what are you guys seeing during the holidays in regards to like auto theft?
Well, in regards to auto theft right now, the biggest thing is the Kia Boys and the Kia Challenge, which is they're targeting certain year vehicles between 2012 and 2021 with Hyundais and Kias, where they're actually able to break into the steering column and actually start the car with a USB port.
Wow.
That's something that came up like on social media, right?
Yes.
How has social media been a driving factor in some of these things?
It really helps out because we get the information out to people and it definitely alerts them to what they need to watch out for.
Now, are these cars, are they like the push-to-start cars, or are they cars that have the actual physical key to start?
They actually have the physical key to start it. So I haven't seen any with the push-button start yet, but there's stories going around that you could get like a reader, and it should be able to pick up your key fob, and you should be able to mimic the key fob, but I haven't seen anything like that yet.
Interesting.
Yikes. Kind of scary.
Yes. It is.
What can people do if they have those types of cars?
Well, I mean, you got to look at it in the reality of it. If they want the car, they're going to take the car. You know, they can punch the key or they can break the window. If they get into it, they're going to be able to get into it. There's all sorts of other items that you could get, like the club. But, you know, everything has, you know, can be manipulated or, you know, can be broken into. So, I mean, if it happens, it's going to happen.
That's very interesting. What about like during the holidays? You know, people are shopping, they're taking their cars, they're, you know, buying a big screen TV or nice jewelry, and then they're putting it in their car. Are you seeing thefts at like malls or stores?
Oh, yes. Parking lots. You're going to have people that are going to go around looking at vehicles, looking inside. If something is visible, you know, it's just an opportunity for them to take it.
Does it specifically rise during this time of year, or do you guys see it all time?
All times. Normally, we had a recent rash of trailhead break-ins where the thieves were actually breaking in and just going after one certain thing. So they would be looking for wallets, purses, taking credit cards, and Detective Wilson will probably talk about this more as well, and going to use them at a store that's nearby and putting them on gift cards. During the holiday season, it's going to be more of leaving items visible, you know, to the public or for an opportunity for a thief to come in and break into your vehicle and take them.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, for folks that are going out hiking and that kind of thing, you obviously don't want to make your backpack or something more heavy, that kind of thing. What advice do you give to those folks? Is it just like take it with you, take it, leave it home?
I would take it with you. You know, you always got to have your wallet for something. It has all your IDs in it. Has all your, you know, it's almost like your cell phone. It has your life in it. So you should take it with you. You shouldn't leave it in your car because it's just an opportunity for someone to go and take it or search for it if they break into your vehicle.
Okay. For those folks that are shopping at the mall, say I got this big item. I need to put it in my car, but I also need to go get something else. What should they do?
Well, I think my personal opinion is I would try to probably run home and put it in the house. So this way you don't have to worry about someone coming in, breaking into your vehicle, taking it. If you do have small items where it's out of the public view, I would say put it in your trunk. But then again, you know, if they want to get into it, they're going to get into it. So my best advice is if you got to run someplace, go back, drop your stuff back off at home, go back out and go get your items.
Okay.
Let's talk a little bit about push to start. A lot of people, especially now that it's finally starting to feel a little bit more like fall, like winter, are starting their cars with that, with the remote. Mm-hmm. Does that make your car more susceptible to a break-in?
So there are certain things when it comes to the push to start, or at least the remote start, because once you get back into your vehicle, you know, you got to press the gas pedal or the brake pedal, and you got to hit a button. That one, if you don't do it that way, of course they can take off with it. With the push button starts, just like getting into the vehicle of such, you definitely got to be inside the vehicle. And if you go walk away from your car, of course your car is going to let you know that you're walking away from it. So the technology is still new, and it gives the thieves the opportunity to get a little bit smarter and a little bit more cunning when they attempt to steal stuff like that.
It's almost like a race, right? To see, yes, are they, you know, is the car company going to put those measures in place, or are the thieves going to try to get ahead of it?
They're probably going to try to get ahead of it. They always try to. And then it finally catches up, and then something new comes out, and then they get ahead again, and then it comes back. So it's a constant. Yeah. It's a constant fight.
Yeah. A race, if you will.
Yeah.
I'll ask you this. Do thieves, are they looking in your window in your car to see what you have?
Yes.
So if you have like a laptop, they're going to get it. If you don't, you know, they're trying to get a quick break in. Is that what's going on too?
Yes, that's definitely what's going on. So they look for any type of opportunity, anything that's visible that they think that might be a value to them, that they could get rid of very quickly. So if there is money left out, if there's bags in the car, even something that might be appealing to them, they're going to do whatever they can to get into the vehicle.
So we have people looking to take not only the things that you have in your vehicle, but also the car itself. What is the biggest challenge that you face when trying to recover a stolen car?
So because it gets reported after the fact, so time, just like any other crime, is of an essence. Sometimes we're able to recover it right away. Other times we're not going to be able to recover it right away. We do have the Auto Theft Task Force that does operate in Southern Arizona that's actively looking for vehicles all the time, looking for those stolen vehicles. Sometimes they show up in the desert and they're put on fire. Some vehicles I've seen in part of my investigations, they go into Mexico. Wow. And sometimes they're recovered down there. Sometimes they just show back up at the house. You know, it just depends on the situation.
Interesting.
Are there chop shops still around? Like, do they take pieces of cars that are stolen?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, they're probably around, but they're very well hidden. They're not going to be in the open. They are going to, you know, operate very, you know, low key, because they don't want anybody to know what they're doing. So if people do see like a lot of vehicles going into one residence and other, you know, like small little parts leaving the area, give us a call, give us a heads up using the 88 crime tip list or tip line, and you know, we can go ahead and start looking into it.
I know a lot of cases are different. Is there an average time that it takes to find a stolen vehicle?
I could tell you, when I first got assigned to the unit in December of last year, I had a case that was assigned to me that was reported in July, and I was able to track down the vehicle in December, almost roughly 6 months after the fact. So, I mean, it could come up, it could show up right away, or it might take a little while to go out and find it.
Is locking your car or having an alarm or some kind of deterrent system, is that helpful for protecting your car and your valuables?
It is. But again, just like anything else, if they want to get into it, they're going to get into it. You know, they can break a window, they can pop locks, they can do whatever they can to get into those items, into the vehicle and take your items. So, and it's a matter of seconds. So an alarm does alert the public around, you know, what's going on. But you know, as we've seen in videos that are posted on YouTube and with other break-ins of vehicles, I mean, they are pretty much doing it right in the open, because it doesn't take that long to go in there and grab what they want to get.
How long are we talking?
I would say anywhere from 30 seconds to a minute.
Wow.
30 seconds.
That's quick. And you're, I mean, people are often spending, you know, at least an hour wherever they're shopping, right?
Yeah. An hour at the gym or an hour at a trail mm-hmm. or shopping or, you know, you shop, oh, I'm hungry. Couple more hours. Mm-hmm. That's unbelievable.
Is there anything that people should have with them in terms of like information about their car, the VIN number, the license plate? Like what information is helpful to then turn over to you to help them and help you find their vehicle if it was to be stolen?
The biggest thing with having the right information, it's going to be if you keep your insurance card on your phone. I know Arizona law allows that to happen, and you can actually use that to show a law enforcement officer when they stop you and they ask you for your driver's license, registration, and proof of insurance. Having that information on your phone could be very helpful because then we could go ahead, run the vehicle identification number. We could get all the information that we need. And we have the insurance information too, because when we do input it in a stolen, it is filled out on a stolen vehicle affidavit. And then it's turned in, and then all of a sudden it's broadcasted everywhere that the vehicle is stolen. So having that information right away for us is going to be very beneficial and can actually help aid in locating your vehicle, sometimes very quickly.
What is it like for you personally, a victim gets their car stolen and you're able to tell them, hey, I found your car and we can get it back to them? What is it like for you?
Oh, it's very good, you know, to find somebody and then actually, you know, hold somebody accountable for what they did to that person. You know, it's a very big violation when it comes to somebody's personal space. It's their property. And when somebody else comes in and takes it, you know, you feel violated. But once you're able to get that back and we can actually say, hey, this is who did this and we're going to go after them for it or hold them accountable for it, it makes them feel very reassuring when we're able to do that. And, you know, it's a hit or miss when we do that. So, you know, once, you know, getting that one case where you actually are able to sit there and say, hey, we know who did this. We're going to go get them. And they're very grateful for it.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, your car is almost an extension of your home, right? It's your personal space.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Credit cards, too. When they steal credit cards from vehicles and we're able to find out and identify the people who did it, it's a great relief to them because then they're like, yay, somebody actually did something for me.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that we forgot to ask or that you want to add about folks protecting themselves? I know it's a year-round sort of thing, but people definitely are out shopping a lot more this time of year.
The big thing that I would probably recommend is, you know, keep things out of sight. You know, the more that you give the opportunity for them to look into your vehicle, the more opportunity it is for them to take in. Security cameras at your house too, because we see a lot of that happen as well, where vehicles are in the driveway, people leave like items like their wallets, their purses. I've even had some cases where firearms were taken from a vehicle because it was left inside the vehicle. That stuff should not be in there. You know, you should probably take it out, place it back into your house, and avoid somebody from taking it. But then again, you know, in all realities, if they want something, they're going to get it. And so security cameras definitely do help. Alarms do help. Locking the doors, of course, helps. But, you know, if they want in, they're going to get in.
Hmm. I'm going to put my wife on blast real quick.
Oh, no.
Hopefully she doesn't come after. She makes fun of me because at the end of the night when everybody goes to bed, I'm checking doors. I'm making sure everybody's car is locked. It's not unlocked. Is that a good routine to have? Or
I usually do that too. So, I mean, okay. It's not a very, I do it very well. I do it very often due to my academy experience when I came through the academy.
Oh.
You know, because the counselors would come through and they would check all of our vehicles every time. And you don't want to be that one person who leaves their vehicle unlocked.
Right.
Because then everyone has to pay for it. So
it's
I usually had a habit of hitting my car alarm more than once or going out and checking my car or my door just to make sure it's locked. So it's always a good habit to do.
Okay. See, my wife, you know, there
you go. Yeah, you're not as crazy as you thought. right?
Yeah, the expert said it's a good thing. I'm going to lean with the expert. I'm going to make her do it from now on, especially since it's cold outside.
Yeah. Or how, you always know when people are going to sleep in the neighborhood, because I can hear like little like honks in the neighborhood of like people locking their car. One thing I did forget to ask real quick. A lot of people have their garage door openers in their cars. Do you see thefts of you know, them getting the car, getting the garage door, and then getting access to the house?
Yep, that's always a definite possibility. I know a lot of people do leave their garage door openers in their vehicle. It's a normal thing. But another thing that they can do, again, and I've seen this in the past, where they're able to use like a device that's able to pick up and utilize, you know, I forget what it's called, like a radio frequency identification, to where they're able to pick it up, you know, and then they can actually go around. Or some guys will go out, or some thieves would actually go out and buy a garage door opener, set it to a specific sequence, and then they go around and see which garage doors open up.
Yikes.
Wow. So, you know, security cameras are always a very good thing, because it can help identify who it is. And we have the means to, you know, identify people using security cameras.
All right. So, Detective Joyce, it's the holiday season, a lot of gift giving, celebrations. We want to ask you, what was your favorite gift during the holiday season?
Does it matter, adult, kid?
Whatever you think is your favorite.
Oh, gosh. I think when I got my big wheel.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I wish they would make those things for adults. I mean, I would be going up and down the roadway, you know, spinning out all the time. So, I would have to say that, yeah, big wheel, maybe my skateboard, but don't tell my father that. It cost him $15,000.
Oh, my goodness.
No.
That's something you don't want to leave in the car.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
No, not that one. You know, this is his personal property from my elbow down to my fingertips.
Oh, that makes more sense. Yikes. Yeah.
Sorry, Dad. You know, I'll throw this out there. He told me that if he ever catch me on a skateboard again, I won't ever have to worry about breaking my arm again.
Oh, no. Do you think you can get on a skateboard right now?
Oh, if I do, he'll kill me. So, you know. Or he'll take possession of his $15,000 investment.
Your secret's safe with us and all the hundreds of people listening.
Hopefully not now, because he subscribes to this too, I think.
Oh, no.
Try to edit that out.
Yeah, we will.
No promises, though.
All right.
He's 2,500 miles away, so, you know.
That is great. So we want to say thank you to you, Detective Joyce, for joining us, giving us an insight to auto thefts in Pima County.
Some very good information. Again, we're going to take a quick break. You are listening to PCSD.
What's the word?
Distracted drivers are causing more collisions each year. Distracted driving is anything that takes the driver's attention away from driving. Any distraction puts drivers, passengers, and the general public in serious danger. A momentary distraction can cause a lifetime of devastating consequences. Please do your part to make our roadways safer. Don't drive distracted. A public safety message from the Pima County Sheriff's Department.
And welcome back to episode 5 of PCSD.
What's the word?
And we are talking financial crimes.
Financial crimes, your money, and we are trying to protect it. So we are bringing in one of the experts, financial crimes detective Michael Wilson. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. I love financial crimes. I covered a lot when I was in the news at my former job, so it's going to be exciting for me. I'm going to grill you with a bunch of questions. So first things first, what kinds of scams or fraud schemes do you see during the holidays?
So obviously during this time of year, a lot of folks are out there buying gifts and trying to get all the presents ready. So we see a really large uptick in what's known as package scams. These are the scams where, you know, you get a text message or an email saying, hey, you know, one of the packages you ordered couldn't quite make it to your house. Could you send us some updated information? And, you know, maybe we can get that package out to you. Now, it usually starts pretty innocently. You know, you send some information in and they start asking you for some shipping fees or maybe some other processing fees. But ultimately, their goal is to get your credit card information. And that's when they start doing some holiday spending of their own on your dime. And so, again, during the holiday, they're really using that sense of urgency that a lot of us feel and wanting to get our gifts on time so we can get them wrapped up or put under the tree or give them to Santa to do those types of things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they prey on that sense of urgency that you're feeling in order to try to get some of that money and take advantage of the situation.
And is that usually like a link via text, via email type thing?
Right. And, you know, actually, as you know, you were speaking to Detective Joyce, I actually got one of those text messages while we were waiting here. It says a UPS package has arrived at the warehouse, and because your address can't be found, your shipping address is incorrect. Please click the link below to modify the time. Otherwise, your package is going to be returned. And that was just in the last few minutes. So, you know, the way these scammers are using this technique is they just, you know, send that out to as many folks as they can. And all they really need is just one person to take the bite and get a few credit card data points. And now they're spending your money wherever they want.
Wow. That's kind of scary. What can you do? Like, how do you verify that it is? Because let me tell you, I want to get those Christmas gifts that I ordered. And so what do you do to verify that it's a legitimate text or email?
Yeah. So the first step is look at the phone number. Most of the times these text messages are going to come from phone numbers that have really unusual area codes, or sometimes even what's known as a country code. And the country code is the little couple digits you see after the plus sign on the number. That particular one I referenced had a country code of 44, which I believe is associated with the UK. So it's not even from the US, but they are pretending to represent the US Postal Service. So that's usually your first sign is, what's this number? If I type this number into the internet, is it going to be associated with the legitimate company or have no data associated with it at all? The second thing is, a lot of these times these entities already know where you live. They're in the billion-dollar industry of logistics and sending packages. So to have addresses not on file is a pretty unusual thing for them. And they'll have more official means of reaching out to you. For the post office, the letter, or you can always go to your local post office to find out additional information. So there are more legitimate ways versus just a text from some unknown phone number. That's probably going to be a little bit more helpful to figure out if it's legitimate or not.
Back to the question about the holidays. So are the holidays a prime time for the scammers? They're like, we can pull on somebody's strings because we can get their attention. Their minds are somewhere else. They're so busy.
Definitely. And you already hit on it. You know, a lot of the times the holidays are for us to, you know, be happy, spend time with friends or family. But unfortunately for a lot of folks, it's a lonely time for them. Mm-hmm. And they want to be a part of that experiences and those experiences. And unfortunately, scammers know this. And they play at those folks that are experiencing a little bit of loneliness. Maybe you're a little older and, you know, friends or family haven't visited in a while. And they will proliferate what's most commonly known as a romance scam. And we see that a lot in Southern Arizona, where they will speak to you on a dating site or social media and kind of play at your heartstrings, just like you mentioned, and get you emotionally invested before starting to ask you for money for whatever reason. And that's usually when the scam starts. And since they've got you locked in emotionally, typically doesn't end after the first request.
Wow.
Let's talk about those heartstrings, not only romance scams, but also donations. Do you see that this time of the year as well? People wanting, you know, to give back to their community and do some good, but then they're getting hurt themselves.
Yeah, it's the season of giving for a reason, you know, and there's nothing more fulfilling than, you know, trying to help out the less fortunate or helping out our community. And we have seen an influx of reports of that. Typically, these will be your donation or GoFundMe type scams for, you know, some emotional situation that really tugs at us a little bit. And we want to help, especially around this time of year. The tough part is, you know, with some of these cases, if the incident doesn't have a really widespread media attention, it's hard to verify whether these incidents are real or not. The best thing we can advise to the public is, you know, do your best research. A lot of the times, if you start, you know, using the great thing, which is the internet, you can find out a lot more detail and have a lot more resources to find out whether, you know, this incident really happened, just some basic facts about it, who these folks are, and even reaching out to them via other channels. Maybe you find a name on a GoFundMe and it has a social media account attached to it. If you're able to independently reach out to them and verify the legitimacy of the request, then, you know, hey, maybe it's not so bad to get some money over there and maybe help them out in a rough situation. Thankfully, most times, a lot of these requests are legitimate, but you know, all it takes is just one. And that's the one instance that we want to try to prevent.
Sure. When we both worked on the news, we did a lot of stories about people getting asked to put money on gift cards or on Visa cards. Why is that an avenue that scammers use?
Yeah, that is, as I think Detective Joyce actually mentioned with the auto theft and break-ins, gift cards and prepaid debit cards are probably the most common way that scammers are going to ask you to send them money. And the reason for that is, one, it's a really easy way for them to take the money, right? They don't have to physically have the card. They just need the data associated with the card to start spending with it. Things like the expiration and the card number. They can use that data to just make a bunch of online purchases. But more importantly, it's also a safety mechanism for them. It makes it harder for law enforcement to track those funds and access those things. So typically the way it works is, you know, once they get the victims to send them money via a gift card or a prepaid debit card, they'll just take the codes and they'll make some sort of online purchase with them. Usually they're buying high-end valuable electronics, and they convert that gift card money to a merchandise item, right? iPad, tablet, stuff like that. Things that have high resale value. They then sell those items for cash and they're able to convert it back into cash without ever having to go through any bank that's tracking all of these data points, which makes it difficult for us to actually find out who's responsible for it. Not impossible, just a little harder.
Makes your job a lot harder.
Yeah.
Can we pause real quick?
Yeah.
The next question you ask, I want to try something new. Is it okay if I just get a little, like a little video of you to do that on social media?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to get it. I'm going to get you asking the question and then I'll just turn around and get.
Which one are we going with?
Whatever one you want. If there's maybe any new scams or not the best advice because we want them to listen.
What about email or phone?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so just look at him, pretend like I'm not here, okay? Let me get the. Sorry to spring this up on you. I just thought about it when you, I was like, this would be perfect for people. Okay.
All right, ready? All right, we'll go 3, 2. Detective Wilson, you know, back when I was at my other job working the news, we saw a lot of phone scams. So is it more phone-based, email-based, social media, text-based? What's happening now when it comes to scams?
So just with the widespread nature of technology now, it's not unusual for scammers to use a huge scope of different mediums to communicate with people. Typically, and you might see this if you receive some scam emails, you might get a scam that first starts with an email. And if you actually look at the list on there, it's got thousands of people on there. Mm-hmm. So usually they'll use emails as a way to filter and reach out in bulk to a lot of folks. But all they really need is one victim. And once they get somebody to respond and actually be a part of the scam, that's when you see them use other tactics like social media, phone calls, text messages, and really using a whole scope to get the scammer emotionally, or the victim rather, emotionally invested in what's going on and make it seem a little bit more real to them. So I wish it was just one type of thing they're using, but unfortunately with how much technology exists and, mm-hmm. and how easy it is to use, mm-hmm. they're using everything.
I didn't realize it was so sophisticated, like a gift card, turn the gift card into a high like electronic item, sell that, you turn cash. I mean, I thought they were just like collecting the gift cards, use it, and that's it.
Yeah. And with, you know, the advent of a lot of these other technologies, things like artificial intelligence or deep fakes that some of the listeners might be aware of, or computer generated images, it's actually a lot easier now for scammers to create these fake social media accounts without having to do really labor-intensive work. They can use all these resources in seconds to make never-before-seen images of people and create never-before-seen videos of people that seem real, mm-hmm. Give them personalized bios and information for a dating site that was written by some chatbot, right? And they can do this in minutes. And so even though we're not seeing quite new scams happening, we are seeing scams that are more efficient because of those techniques. And that just means a lot more losses for a lot of folks.
Yeah, I've heard of some like AI songs from some popular artists that weren't there, that might have been there. I don't know. So yeah, it's pretty interesting.
Let's talk about, and you touched on this a little bit earlier about our older folks in our community. You know, a lot of them, I think we're at that gap, right, where they didn't really grow up with the technology that we have now. And so they rely on some of their younger family members or friends to kind of teach them about how it works. But why did older folks get so preyed on, and what should family members tell our older population about these scams?
Yeah, and you hit it right on the head there. You know, a lot of these folks grew up in a different time where they're a little bit more trusting of the community and are more willing to work with a lot of individuals that they just meet. And scammers know this, and they take advantage of that and combine it with some of the loneliness that exists in a lot of these older communities. Their main tactic is really that isolation. And that's something that you see a lot with older folks, you know, whether it's just living out here in southern Arizona, enjoying a lot of the space and fresh air we have. But on top of that, with, you know, maybe friends or family not visiting as much, or maybe they're not living with anybody in their home anymore. Scammers know this, and they really prey on that and use that as a tactic to keep you isolated, to try to keep these scams happening in the background in secret. And that's what makes older folks a really prime target for these types of things.
How hard is tracking down someone's money that they lost, or, you know, trying to figure that out?
It's pretty difficult at the local level. And the reason for that is, you know, while 20 years ago, a lot of scams could be done where, you know, some guy just writing some fake checks and he was just living down the street from you. In today's time, most of these scams are international. So even though we're able to potentially locate the country or state or location of origin, there's jurisdictional limitations on what we're able to do. And once we pass those cases on to our federal partners, the overwhelming number of these types of things and the other jurisdictional issues they face at the international level make it really hard for these scammers to face some sort of accountability. The unique thing about fraud is that a lot of these crimes can be stopped at the onset if folks are just aware of how they happen. And so that makes it really unique and special that we can stop these at that early level. You know, we did recently just have some success returning $130,000 to an individual who was sending money to somebody here in Pima County. We were able to stop that, and this individual lives in California. And thankfully, he only lost $7 as part of that scam.
Wow.
But
that's incredible.
Even though, you know, that's a good success story for him, the other person in Pima County, you know, she lost $15,000. And it, you know, because the way we talked about how money moves through gift cards and merchandise and all these other things, you know, a lot of the cards that she spent are sent to these scammers. We're used to buy a lot of products that are now registered in other countries. Mm. And it's almost impossible to track those individuals down and hold them accountable for what's going on. So it's really key that we stop this early on as early as possible.
Yeah, that is so much money. What was the tipping point for them? Like, what? How did they realize that they were getting scammed?
They actually never realized it until we called them.
What?
You know, he this particular individual had received what's known as a government impersonation scam. It's very common here. Mm-hmm. And apparently it's happening in Northern California as well. But he received a call that FBI agents, you know, were aware that he was involved in some large fraudulent scheme. And in order to make sure he wasn't, he needs to send him some money. So he, you know, again, growing up in a different time where he was trusting of these and not having a way to verify whether the FBI was really calling him or not, he sent him the money. And when I called him, he actually didn't really want to give me the report at first because he said his money would be back by Monday because that's what the FBI told him.
Yeah, because it's the FBI. You think the FBI is exactly. As legit as they come, right?
Yeah. Exactly. There are way more legitimate means of getting your money to the FBI. And, you know, hopefully for some of our listeners, you never have to go through that. But typically they're not going to call you on the phone from a spoofed phone number or, you know, some other number you're not familiar with in order to get you to send them Bitcoin or debit cards or all these other things that we just don't use to get that. So just be aware of that. If it sounds like, you know, something's not right, it most likely isn't. And no legitimate entity is ever going to ask for money through gift cards or Bitcoin or all these other means. So the government always has a way of getting whatever money they need.
Yeah, the IRS will find you. Yeah, so don't worry.
Yeah, they will find you. You mentioned something. You said Bitcoin. Are we coming to the era where instead of sending gift cards, people are the scammers or those frauds are say, hey, send me the Bitcoin?
Right. Cryptocurrency is huge right now in scams. Again, the reasons for that are even better than the reasons we mentioned with gift cards earlier, which is cryptocurrency is almost impossible to trace, right? It's the basis for why it exists. It's an anonymous way of having financial transactions. And as cryptocurrency becomes more popular, you're seeing things like Bitcoin ATMs or other types of cryptocurrencies just at local gas stations now. And a lot of these scammers will just direct typically older folks to go withdraw some cash from their account, deposit it into this cryptocurrency ATM at the local convenience store. And within seconds, that money's already across the world. And it can jump through various accounts with complete anonymity, right? And it's gone. And there's almost no way to get it back. So it's a whole new spin on the common scams that we've dealt with for years.
If you had to put a percentage on the amount of money that gets recovered, what would it be?
I honestly couldn't even tell you. Wow. I mean, it's pretty rare. And again, it's not for lack of trying, but a lot of the tactics that these scammers use, make it extremely difficult to get it back, using isolation for a lot of their victims, that by the time they finally know what's going on, months and weeks have passed, and a lot of the evidence is gone. So it's pretty low. It doesn't make it impossible, but what it means is that prevention is the key, right? And stopping it early is what's most important. And I hope that some of the listeners can take some of what we're talking about today and actually apply that. Or if they've heard somebody that might be going through some scam, that, hey, they should reach out to their local law enforcement agency. And if that's us, give us a call. And hopefully we can try to prevent it from going further.
I am going to play this podcast for my grandfather. He is so giving and he is so trusting of the community, right? And so it's just so important to always be wary. You know, I always, and it's probably a fault nowadays, I'm always like, this isn't real. Don't believe it. And you have to do that research. It takes a little bit of work, but I mean, you worked hard for your money. You don't want to be sending it to people who are just taking it or are undeserving of it.
So. Exactly. And that's what makes Arizona in general a prime target. You know, we've got a huge retirement community, a lot of folks that worked really hard for a long time in order to build that nest egg and enjoy their retirement years. And scammers know that. And that's what makes the proliferation of that in our community just so widespread. So definitely play it for them. And any listeners out there, too, should definitely play that for their family members. And hopefully we can, again, spread the word and try to prevent this from happening.
Oh, that's great. And we asked the Detective Joyce earlier what his favorite holiday gift was. Now we turn to you.
And if you say gift card, well, this whole thing.
Yeah. No way. Yeah.
Yeah. Gift cards would definitely put me on a different track in my life. But for me, growing up in the 90s, I would have to say a Nintendo 64.
Oh, yeah.
That was a game changer for me as a kid. Uh-huh. Playing some games in 3D and
Mario Kart.
Yeah. They don't make them like that anymore.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
That's a good one. What about you?
Honestly, now that he says that, I totally remember unwrapping a Nintendo 64. And then, I remember getting like a PlayStation years later, PlayStation 2.
PlayStation 2.
Yeah. And I don't like anything to be a surprise. That specific gift, I opened it with a knife, saw what I got, then taped it back up. I was that kid. Sorry, Mom.
Wow. I'm telling your mom and dad next time I see them. I'm going to make sure they're
familiar. And I'm the same way. Like, I don't even let gifts that I give to people be a surprise. I'm like, do you want to see what I got you for Christmas? I love giving gifts. So.
All right. I'm going to show my age. I'm going to go with, I got a Super Nintendo. That's how old I am.
Hey, that one was a good one too.
Super Nintendo.
I've heard of people playing that.
That was the one with like the purple, right? Yeah. We had one of those.
It did have purple. And I'll say the Super Nintendo. And then I had this hockey game with the knobs. I forgot what they call it, but it's just a hockey game. You put the puck in there and it was really cool. So
yeah.
Those are my two favorites.
Those are good. Those are good ones.
I guess it's safe to say you probably mastered the technique of blowing in a cartridge to get the game to work.
So we still have a Nintendo at my house, and I'll play with my kids, and sometimes it'll break down, and I'll blow into the game, and they're like, what are you doing? I'm like, trust me, it works.
And it's like, do you like slam it in there in the middle? Do you go one side then left? Like, I remember
there's tactics.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. I'm very gentle because this is an original Nintendo. So I'm like slowly putting it, please work, push it down, hit the power. So
yeah, kids today don't know.
They don't know. Yeah.
They don't know how good they have it.
That's true.
Well, Detective Wilson, thank you so much for joining us. I mean, some great insight to help out our community to avoid being a victim. We just have to be vigilant.
Definitely. And thank you for having me on. And again, you know, like I said, fraud is all about prevention. And our department is really trying to lead the way in reaching out to the community and being out there at the forefront to make the community aware of what's going on. So if anybody's listening and you know they want to have us stop by their community, or we do presentations on this all the time that will help educate the community on what today's fraud looks like and ways to prevent that. And if it sounds like something anybody's interested in, feel free to reach out to the department and we can definitely do that.
All right.
Some great information. All right. You've been listening to episode 5. Can you believe we're on episode 5?
I cannot.
Episode 5 of PCSD. What's the word?